Opera Night with Paul Herriot.
So I'm Francesco Cilluffo, principal conductor here at the Wexford Festival, and I'm conducting this year the production of Mascagni's Le Maschere.
Francesco, welcome back to Lyric. Mascagni's Maschere is very often described as his homage to the traditions of Commedia dell'arte, but also to Rossini.
Yes, I think people expect from a Mascagni opera something quite different that you get from Le Maschere. You were absolutely right. Mascagni decided, because he was nominated director of the Conservatoire in Pesaro, so the hometown of Rossini, decided that he wanted to pay homage to Rossini and to generally to Italian opera buffa, because he felt, you know, he himself being the hot name of Verismo with Cavalleria Rusticana, he felt that, to quote him, we forgot how to laugh on stage. There's far too much drama going on, but, you know, we should remember that a good part of our operatic history as Italians was opera buffa, was Rossini, and before that it was Cimarosa, Paisiello, the wonderful, you know, Napolitan comic opera school. What he did, Mascagni, and that's, I think, one of the most amazing thing about this opera is that it was written in 1901, and it was actually premiered 2 weeks before Verdi died. And I think it's not by chance that I mentioned Verdi, because it's in a way Mascagni's version of Falstaff, in a way. So how to deal, which is, in a way, did what Verdi did. He wanted to face and confront and measure himself with this amazing past of comic opera that was not there anymore.
And there were, quite uniquely, I think, several opening productions simultaneously, in fact.
Yeah, I think that was the first and last time that ever happened, and for a reason. I think, you know, we are used now to Taylor Swift and that kind of media handling of how things are done today. But, you know, you have to remember that in 1901, you know, was ages before any concept of, you know, PR, PA, whatever happened.
And mass entertainment.
So in a way, it was really brave, edging on, you know, hubris, I would say, that he decided to have an opening night simultaneously in 7 theatres. Eventually it was only 6, because Naples had a problem with opening night, because singers were sick. Because you have to imagine, 7 premiere means that you have to have 7 brand new casts and production and conductor.
It's bizarre nearly for the time.
I think it wanted to be a statement. They really wanted to force back into the stage comic opera, Italian comic opera. And in a way, we have to give Mascagni the fact that, you know, you may like or not what came out with Le Maschere, but he was the very first one to do something that became very popular in music, and not only in music, only 20 years later, which is neoclassicism. You know, he was the first one, you know, decades before Strauss, before Busoni, to think that it was about time to revisit the past through the modern eyes and use some forms of the ancient kind of commedia dell'arte or comic opera.
There are 15 operas, I think, aren't there? 15 operas there or thereabouts, but at this stage, as I understand it, after the huge success of Cavalleria Rusticana, he was looking for another success, and that didn't come easily.
No. Well, I have to say, first of all, I think clearly Mascagni was a bit like, in a way, like Puccini. He was not really like a comic opera composer. So, you know, Puccini has definitely scored higher with his Gianni Schicchi, his only real comic opera. But he wasn't exactly his forte. I think generally what made Mascagni never really reply the success of Cavalleria Rusticana was that he always tried something new. Like he would never write the next opera in the same kind of genre or, you know, style or expressive world of the previous one. And I think that was the problem. In a way, if you think...
But very creative and very brave.
Very brave and really, really in tune also. Sometimes even, like with Le Maschere, well ahead of his time. I think The problem is that even then, the market loved to have labels. And in a way, what Puccini really understood was that if he was going to write the same kind of opera, although with different music, of course, you know, he would have, you know, he was going to be the real Verdi successor. And it's interesting because I keep reminding when I work on a Mascagni opera that actually when Verdi was alive, Verdi thought that Mascagni was going to be his heir, you know, his successor. Because in Cavalleria Rusticana, Verdi saw something very modern, but still linked to what he thought was the Italian tradition, you know. And he thought that Puccini was a bit too much into the German and French music world. So he thought that Mascagni was the next one. And in a way, while Puccini is doubtlessly, you know, a genius, in a way, he was never quite as daring as Mascagni. And I think Mascagni paid, I think, a bit for being so daring, you know, and a totally different composer. And I think that's also what you see in Le Masque. There's so much going on musically that you almost sometimes want to narrow a bit your view to understand what's going on. Where Puccini had just the most amazing skill to write just enough to entertain without, you know, doing too much.
There's also in this particular production also a lot going on in terms of the overall subject of the festival, which is theatre within theatre. And so there's an unorthodox, but I thought very effective opening to this piece in which you're involved, where we have our actor who explains to us as the professor who all these characters actually are before we even set off on the journey.
Yeah,
it's interesting that, and you're involved.
I am involved, yes. I have to say, this counts as my acting debut in English.
Yeah, so are you going to be continuing in that vein?
Well, I think, as I would say in America, I would rather stick to my day job, I think, you know. Yes, but actually, that's not that spoken beginning, you know, in which basically, I mean, I'm sure I can give this away. Basically, I start the overture, and the public thinks, well, you know, here's the overture to the opera, and we are interrupted after a few moments by the so-called kind of capo comico. It's called Joe Cadillo, who is basically the stage director, who thinks that this is just a rehearsal, so he wants to bring the character in to present the character, to talk about the character. So, but and so there's actually a bit of a spoken moment before the opera starts. But this is actually really, that's what Mascagni thought. And that's, again, something completely revolutionary, which actually also explains why it wasn't that successful. Because people, especially in Italy at that time, you know, they were either going to see a play or an opera. They hated for the two things to be mixed up together. They really hated when on stage you had a mixture of things. You know, famously, when Othello by Shakespeare was translated into Italian and given as a play in Italian, they had to cut out from the play all the kind of, you know, mixed comedy-like lines, because the people would not want to see a tragedy with a different language other than a very high, you know, aristocratic, elegant language. So Mascagni, to bring something so real, so incredibly modern, like, you know, the orchestra being interrupted, spoken text, and then the opera. I mean, that was really daring.
This is all part of the alchemy of this as well, that you have Mascagni dealing with the Commedia dell'arte, which is a much older convention, of course.
Yeah.
But very fundamental to Italian theatre and performance.
Yeah, I think because in a way, I mean, Commedia dell'arte is very Italian, but I think each country, every country, theatrical tradition has some kind of Commedia dell'arte.
That's so true. It might be pantomime, for example, in Northern Europe.
Yeah, so in a way, you have the usual kind of situation and characters that are almost like stereotypical. So you have the two young lovers, the old father who doesn't want the daughter to marry the, you know, someone who wants the daughter to marry the rich and older man. And then you have the rich and older man who makes a spectacle of himself. And then there's always the cunning servant. You know, those are recurrent types or stereotypes through most theaters. And I think what was interesting for Mascagni and eventually became really, really interesting for Strauss or other Italian composers like Wolf Ferrari was to think that because of the mask, because of this not being a realistic character, then in a way some aspect of that could speak very much to the 20th century audience. So, because the 20th century audience, I mean, if we think of all the theater, then, you know, Brecht and all that, is very open to the idea that, okay, I'm seeing a situation there, but what is really interesting is how the situation is presented and what's beneath, you know, behind that, beyond that. And I think that's when music comes really handy, you know, because if you think about one of the most wonderful Richard Strauss opera, Ariadne of Naxos, mm-hmm. you have actually the mask of Commedia dell'arte there. You have Brighella, you have Arlecchino. And the way they interact with the play within the play also in that opera, it's really telling. But, you know, that was a good 10 years after Mascagno and the Maschera.
Watching the rehearsals, one of the highlights, musically, for me at any rate, that came across, it's actually the writing in this particular opera for the chorus.
Yeah.
They're lovely moments.
They're lovely moments because the chorus is not as much as a character as sometimes it is in other operas. If we think of Aria Rusticana, the chorus is the rural community, the religious community, you know, the Easter hymn and all that. In this case, the chorus has a very important function, which is, again, something kind of in between theater and concert, you would say, like, they actually present the manifesto of the opera. You know, the manifesto says, you know, it's almost like when I was rehearsing the opera, I would say to the chorus, you know, this is like a declaration of intent, that there's a kind of an anthem quality to it. And I think the closest thing you get to this is the end of the Meistersinger from Wagner, you know, because the manifesto, which the chorus sings in the occasion of this, you know, party, is an ode to the Italian mask, to the Italian art of comedy of the past, and saying that it's about time that this art is back, that is popular again, you know. And so the color writing is really amazing because it's a mixture on one side of this very kind of almost liturgical, almost really official big choral writing. And then at the same time, you have things that are much lighter, like, you know, there's almost like a tarantella writing in at one point. There's a dance going on. And again, you know, going back to the dance of, you know, like Pavana and all that. So dances from the 18th and 19th century. It's a fascinating mixture of things. And I do believe that nowadays the public is much more ready to engage with this because we know, in a way, Mascagni was really ahead of his time, but now we are here, you know, a good 100 years and more after that. And I think we can actually pick and choose and realize that, you know, it makes much more sense, I think.
What are your own favorite moments in it? What should we look out for, do you think? Well, that's a difficult question to ask. And what should we look out for?
Well, your own, you know. Well, you know, as always, I always say that in Wexford, in a way, we all do a big act of love because we bring back this...
You're uncovering and revealing things ostensibly for the first time.
So you wouldn't ask, you know, a father who's the favorite child, yeah. Although we know that sometimes there is a favorite child. So I think what I generally think, and this is also a choice that I made as a conductor, I think rather than underlining the most obvious kind of fast music passages like that sounds very much like Rossini and all that, which are very helpful in the plot, but they're not particularly idiomatic or personal to Mascagni writing, we tend to enjoy and emphasize the beautiful lyrical writing of some scenes. You know, there's a couple, especially there's a quartet toward the end, which on paper is just a quartet in which each person, each character is trying to decide a method, like, you know, what to do next in order to get what he or she wants. So it's a very kind of calculated moment, nothing lyrical about that. But Mascagni makes it in this incredible concertante piece for four voices that brings on this genuine and really lyric and nostalgic melody. Because I think that's one of the things that Mascagni learned and realized much before Strauss or Busoni or other people after him, is that by bringing the music or what we perceive as being a gold past, a past in which everything was kind of light and funny, like in the Commedia, we actually are confronted with how little of that is in today's world. And therefore, here comes the nostalgia, the melancholy. This is something that, of course, Richard Strauss understood very well if we think about an opera like, you know, Rosenkavalier or that. When you bring back the music and the feel of this 18th century kind of golden war, but you make it relevant to today by realizing how different the world of today is. And so by putting these two things together, what is left? On one side is, you know, entertainment for sure, because it's a funny night at the opera. But at the same time, there's quite something slightly more sad, something more melancholic about, which means that, you know, brings you to reflect about time passing and season passing and ages passing, and also what's relevant to certain past and what is relevant today. So it's actually, you know, as always with opera, I like to say, there's so much more going on than what you just see on stage.
Well, Francesco, we'll know what to be listening out for as we anticipate now the second half of this opera tonight. You're talking about time passing. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time today, because it's a very busy time at the beginning of the festival.
Yeah.
And we look forward to celebrating, well, hopefully all being well, your 10th anniversary this time next year.
This time next year.
At this very table.
Yes, okay. Well, thank you.
Francesco, thank you so much, as always.
Thank you.
Good evening, I'm Lavinia Bini, and I'm doing the role of Rosaura in the opera Le Maschere of Mascagni.
Lavinia, welcome to Lyric. Thank you very much for taking time to talk to us about this lovely, lovely piece. And your character in it, of Rosaura, finds herself right in the middle of everything. She's the daughter of Pantalone, in love with Florindo, but her father has other ideas, and they're not good. Tell us about that.
My father wants another husband for me, that is Capitan Spavento, and he is a very rude boy. I don't like him.
And he's older, too.
Yeah, he's older too, but it seems that he has a good position, he has money, that he came from an important family. So this is the reason why my father wants this. She is really strong, and she has very, very clear idea about what she wants. But at the same time, she's fragile. She's a young girl. She's in love. So she has all the thing that the young girls have. But at the same time, she has the responsibility of the place where the opera it's going on.
Oh. Mascagni himself, a very well-known composer, this opera, not so well-known. Have you sung a lot of Mascagni in your career?
No, this is my first Mascagni.
Really?
Yes, yes. This is my first approach with him, and he's Tuscany. He's from Tuscany, like me. Huh? So I have a very good feelings with his music. I feel really comfortable with him.
Lavinia, obviously, like most singers, you're no stranger to festivals and to the difference of festivals and so on.
Yes, I did the Trittico of Puccini, and this is the same production that we will do next year in Opera Bastille. And I think that about the question that you told me about the energy of this festival, I think that you can find the same atmosphere in the beautiful festival of Salzburg, and you can have like the feelings that you are in amazing place. They, like here, they do 4-6 performance every day in different places of the town, not only in the theaters, because they have three big theaters: Haus für Mozart, Pfälzereischule, Großes Festspielhaus. But they do also other performance during the day in the church, in the Mozarteum, in different places. So it's full of music, full of people that love music, not only opera, because of course there are a lot of concerts, a lot of recitals, also instruments recital, and you feel this energy and make music there like here. It's different. It's really different.
Lavinia Bini, thank you so much for taking time, and all best wishes, of course, for the opening night.
I'm very, very excited.
My name is Rory Musgrave. I'm a baritone from Connemara, and I am singing Dottore Graziano Balanzano from Le Maschere by Mascagni. The opera is a Commedia dell'arte homage by Mascagni. Basically, he fell in love with the Commedia dell'arte format, and he wanted to write a love letter to the comedies of Rossini and Donizetti, and to the comedic heritage of Italian comedy and theatre. And so he wrote this piece really as a giant love letter, and also as a way of experimenting with a new style, a new sound. So it's Mascagni in his proto form, in a way, before he graduates to what we know later, at that lush verismo sound that we hear hints of here and there, but he's still experimenting. But he lands the comedy fantastically well. He takes these sketched archetypal characters and he gives them life and color, and they interact like wonderful chemistry. It's all these chemicals and ingredients that just suddenly spark off each other and creates a beautiful comic farce, basically. It's a comedy of errors where, of course, the wrong people are intending to get married and so on and so forth, and we won't give away the ending, but it's a beautiful, beautiful pastiche and to the comedy of old.
And it's an alchemy in every sense of the term.
Absolutely.
Both in terms of the plot and the artistic sort of input.
Completely. I completely agree. It has this transformative quality. And the nice thing with the archetypal characters, these Commedia dell'arte characters, is that they are broadly sketched, so the people automatically would recognize the people that they're symbolizing within society. But then within that, you get to invest and create and reveal, through the use of masks and costume, you get to reveal what real humanity is actually like, how human beings really interact. Rather than getting bogged down in individual personality, you're actually looking at an exploration of society as a whole, and you're holding up a comic mirror to society. It was always an opportunity for people to not only laugh at what was happening on stage, but also gently to laugh at themselves. And that is where the real alchemy and the magic comes in, because what we do is we literally strip off the masks very deliberately, but even though the masks are physically removed, they're still there. And what we're trying to reveal is that actually all the masks that we wear in everyday life are invisible most of the time. And through this process of literally and figuratively stripping down to bare bones and adopting more modernized vestiges, costumes, settings, surroundings, what we do is we're actually saying that nothing has changed. Humanity at its core is still as mad and as complex and as funny and as tragic as it has ever been. And that is why this is an art form is still so powerful and so relevant. And opera has, since it was really crystallized 400 years ago into its first what we would recognise as opera has stayed relevant.
We're warned of this almost from the prologue, actually. I think we're told that, you know, if our attention drifts from the stage at all, we're likely to find the same characters on the left and right, right-hand side of us. So clearly nothing has changed in the space of hundreds of years. What's interesting about this, actually, is that in terms of the design, which is marvellous, we actually begin with the traditional commedia dell'arte image, and suddenly everybody abandons that.
Yes.
And adopts it at the end.
Yes.
So it's all a bit in reverse.
Absolutely. And I think that the director and his team have done a marvellous job in understanding what the power of these characters, these archetypal commedia dell'arte characters, had and still have. But you're always faced with the question of how do you apply it to today? You could have made a completely valid choice in saying we are just going to do a traditional commedia dell'arte farce in traditional costume from start to finish. And that would have been a wonderful and entertaining evening, and people would have come away with something from it. Of course they would have. However, they've deliberately chosen to strip away those outer layers and to put us in a very modern context, which is all about stripping back, about exposing one's true self, and about letting go of masks, even if it's only temporary. And that is where the frisson of a more modern approach to this material really, really comes into play. And I think they've done a marvelous job in doing that. And in a way, the thing that I love most about it is we're not hiding that transformation. We openly are there in these beautiful Venetian costumes with the masks and so on and so forth. And by literally stripping them off, we are symbolically and realistically showing the audience that what they're about to see is something bare. Even though it is funny, and it does still fall within the dramatic structure of the opera, we are still trying to reveal something. And I think it works really, really well. And the comedy just still shines forth. And we have a romp of a time doing it, I'm not going to lie.
Rory, the time has flown here. Rory Musgrave, now that we've spoken to you, we really feel we're back.
Well, it was my pleasure. Really an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Paul. And I hope everyone enjoys the festival this year.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Opera Night on RTE Lyric FM.